Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Training Congregation Mount Zion for 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is February 2, 2017, or it is AR 6, 2020. We're going to start our first service today with a song entitled, Rescue the Perishing. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying, snatch them in pity from sin and the grave. Weep o'er the heavy one, lift up the fallen, tell them of Yahshua the mighty to save. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save. Though they are slighting him, still he is waiting, waiting the path and that shall to receive. Plead with them earnestly, plead with them gently, he will forgive if they only believe. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save. Down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, feelings not buried that grace can restore. Touched by a loving heart, wakened by kindness, cords that are broken will vibrate once more. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save. Rescue the perishing, duty demands it, strength for the labor the Yah will provide. Back to the narrow way, patiently wend them, tell the poor wanderer a Savior has died. Rescue the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save. Answer book number 4 by the V.T. Hodder. We're going to start with page 1. It says, Josias, are John's prophecy fulfilled? Okay, because the prediction of the fall of the Ottoman Empire on August 11th, 1840 was strikingly fulfilled. Was Josias Litch correct in claiming that the prophecy of Revelation 9:5, 15-20 was thus perfectly enacted? Answer. Though in the working out of Litch's prediction, there was a seemingly preternatural element of coincidence. The event in question could not have been that described in John's prophecy, for the latter reveals that the four angels found in the Euphrates were to slay the third part of men. And where in the scriptures is any Gentile nation symbolized by angels? Moreover, the Ottoman Empire did not fall at all. Instead, it placed itself under the control of the Christian nations. Now, that Ottoman Empire, that was Greece. That was their, as an Arab nation, the Ottoman Empire was an Arab nation that was caretakers of the land of Israel. That's found in Great Controversy, page 335. Furthermore, the angels had an army of 200 million horsemen, while Turkey never had that many cavalrymen. Now, that 200 million horsemen is found in Revelation 9:16. Still further, the prophecies of the Revelation calls for slain the third part of men, Revelation 9:15. Whereas in the fulfillment of Lysias' prediction, no slain took place. In view of all of these facts, it is self-evident that though Lysias' prediction may have been fulfilled, it in no wise had reference to the revelators, not John's revelators' great controversy. Records merely that Lysias' only prediction, not John's, met fulfillment. So, Lysias' prediction being erroneously based on the revelation was a preternatural coincidence, not a fulfillment of the revelator's prophecy. Are the great tribulation and the time of trouble the same? Question number 78 here. See, this is answer book number 4, and V.T. Hallett, he has, I think, 5 of these answer books. And so this is a continue on from answer book number 1 through 5 of them. Alright, it says, are the great tribulation and the time of the trouble the same? But actually, the question should have been asked, is the great tribulation and the time of the trouble the same? How can one prove that the great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world, nor ever shall be, Matthew 24:21, is not the time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, Daniel 12:1. Answer, prophesying of the great tribulation, Yahshua forewarned that it would be a time of persecution, privation, and death unto the saints, and that they should therefore flee unto the mountains to save their lives, lest there should no flesh be saved. Matthew 24:16-22. But Daniel foretells that in a time of trouble such as never was, Michael will stand up and deliver every one of the saints so that they will not experience death. Obviously, therefore, these two events occur at different times, each being special and unique. The greatest of his kind, indeed, prophecy declares that there shall never be another such tribulation, and there shall never be another such trouble. See answer book number 2, question number 47, for a detailed description of these two events. And I think I want to go into answer book number 2 now, number 47, and read that right now. I saw, says Sister White, that the anger of the nations, the wrath of Yahweh, and the time, the judge, the dead, were separate and distinct, one following the other. Also that Michael had not stood up, and that the time of the trouble, such as it never was, had not yet commenced. That's an early writing, page 36. Could this anger of the nations be the battle of the Armageddon? While the vision makes plain that the first three events, the judgment of the dead, the anger of the nations, and the wrath of Yahweh, follow one another in consecutive order, occupying three separate, distinct, and successive periods, it does not clear the time of the fourth event, Michael standing up. The wrath of Yahweh, as commonly understood, is the seven last plagues, Revelation 15:1. And is visited during the period between the close of probation and the second coming of the Yahshua. For the judgment of the dead, as understood by at least all Adventists, covers two periods. The first in probationary time, immediately preceding the judgment of the living. And the second during the millennium, judgment of the living. So with Yahweh's wrath coming, and the period from the close of probation of the second coming of Yahshua, the anger of the nations can only take place during the time of the judgment of the living. And we're in the judgment of the living now, in the 12th hour since 2002, we entered into the judgment of the living. During the loud cry of the third angel's message. So we're in the loud cry of the third angel's message right now. We're in the loud cry. We're not in the strong voice that the third angel sounded in 1844. It only sounded to the Adventist Church in 1844. But the loud cry of the third angels and the judgment of the living time here in the 12th hour is with a loud cry. And that loud cry is again to the Adventist Church. And that loud cry will bring out the 144,000. The anger of the nations cannot therefore be the Armageddon, for it takes place in the time of the sixth plague, Revelation 16:12-16. And the wrath of Yahweh period, the anger of the nations and the wrath of Yahweh are, as we must ever keep in mind, two separate and distinct events, one following the other. Accordingly, rather than being the Armageddon, the anger of the nations in the time of the trouble, such as never was, the time in which Michael, taking the reins in his own hands, Testimonies to Ministers, page 300, stands up to deliver everyone that shall be found written in the book, Daniel 12:1. And as the anger of the nations is in the time of the judgment of the living, that's in the 12th parabolic hour. See, the third angel's message delivered unto the Adventists in 1844 with just a loud voice. It wasn't a loud cry. And it was during the 10th parabolic hour. And that loud voice, third angel, sounded all the way through the 11th hour. And so that 10th and 11th hour covered 1844 up to 2000 through 2003. Or up to 2003. Okay, and so now we're in the loud cry of the third angel. The loud cry is to the Adventist Church. It is not to the world. But when the fourth and fifth angel joins that third angel, it'll be at the time of the first fruits harvest for the 144,000, because that's when the message then will go to the world. Adventist is not taking the message of the third angel with a loud cry to the world. They are taking it only to the church. And the Adventist Church is in all the world. But the third angel's message is only going to the Adventist members around the world. In all the nations, islands, everywhere. And what is that loud cry of the third angel to do? It's to alert the Adventist members that at the 144,000, it's time for them to come forth as the next great event. That's what the loud cry of the third angel is for. It's not for the gathering of the inhabitants of the world. As the anger of the nations is in the time of the judgment of the living, that's the hour that we're in now, when the nations are definitely angry. They've never been more angrier than they are today. And they're in consternation. The loud cry of the third angel's message, the anger is obviously directed against Yahweh's people. There it is, the Seventh-day Adventists. It's against his people, not against his anger is not against the Gentile nations. Not yet, anyway. Not against the nations themselves. Obvious is this fact because the nations among themselves have always been angry and are angry even today. Although we are still in the time of the judgment of the dead. See, the nations have always been angry. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had these millions of wars the last 6,000 years between different nations. Ever since the Tower of Babel, when the people were scattered, and the different races and dialects were created there, Yahweh created those different races of people at the Tower of Babel when he struck that thing down and confounded their language and made all the different races of the earth. He scattered them all over the four corners of the earth. So it says, and they've been angry. They have made war against each other because they wouldn't stay in their borders that Yahweh give them, the individual nation. So they want to cross over and take their neighbor's land. And the Bible and the law says that you are not to covet your neighbor's property or his wife or anything that belongs to him. And the nations have always coveted their neighbor's land, wanting to take everything away from them. All right, so that's why we've had wars and rumors of wars, and nations have always been angry since the Tower of Babel. They were angry when their language was confounded at the Tower of Babel because they started fighting each other right at the Tower of Babel because they couldn't understand each other. They got so mad because they couldn't understand each other and build that tower, finish building it. And that's when they got angry. This is exactly what's going on today. They want to come in and take over America. They want to take over all nations of the world. All these different races of people. The Muslims have many different sects of people. There's at least 7 different sects of Muslim Arab people. You have the Egyptians, you have the Afghanistans, you've got the Pakistans, you've got the Iraqis, you've got the Iran, you've got the Lebanese, you've got the Palestine, Gaza Strip, you got Syria, you got the Greeks, you got the Grecians. You just got them. There's at least 12 different of those people, and they have fanned out all over the world. They're in all nations of the world, and they're angry people. And they are committing terror on all nations wherever they go. This is what we're seeing the fulfillment of right now. The anger of the nations will follow up on the two-horned beast's decree that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Revelation 13:15. Alright, that image of the beast decree had already been made. It was made when Obama took his presidency in 2009 of this country, a Muslim, one of those Muslim sects from Kenya, Africa, that came over here, an alien from another country. No, he's not a legitimate citizen of this country. He come in and took over this country, and he set up the mark of the beast, the decree. Because the first thing he went after was health care reform, and he had a number in it, and forcing everybody to take that number. Well, 20 million people signed up for it. That's what Revelation 19:20 says. It says as many as they had deceived into taking the mark of the beast. This beast wasn't successful in causing everybody to take it. Only those that he had deceived into taking it took it. And there's about 20 million of those here in America. But that time is over with now. And that's why this country is angry. It's because, we got a new president now that is completely disannulling that decree of this beast. At the same time, the notorious woman, Babylon, the Great, will ride the scarlet-colored beast, Revelation 17, and rule the nation. This woman represents Mystery Babylon, Revelation 17. This same crisis will come up on our people in all parts of the world, Testimony, Volume 6, page 395. And Hillary Clinton represents this woman in a symbol of this mystery woman, this Babylon woman, that's Revelation 17:3. She was a symbol of a literal living subject matter. A symbol of this woman, Hillary Clinton, represented that. Well, she's been vanquished. So it shows that where we're at the state of time. This Mystery Babylon woman has already come up and gone. And Obama worked with this Mystery Babylon woman and during his 8 years of the presidency. And now his time is over with. And he's fallen. He's out now. And now this decree... because it didn't, this beast didn't get his decree completely fulfilled all over the world. The nations are angry. The nations are angry over this. It says concerning this anger of the nations, a worldwide confederacy against those who refuse to worship the beast in his image. It's a worldwide confederacy. The Yahweh predicted through the prophet Zechariah, and in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. Zechariah 12:3. This is where we're at right this very moment. In that day shall the Yahweh defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them. At that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of Yahweh before them. Zechariah 12:8. then clad in the armor of Yahshua's righteousness, declares the spirit of prophecy. The congregation is entered upon her final conflict, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army of banners. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. Prophecy in Kings, page 725. And Donald Trump is the physical army that Yahweh has led up, the civil army that he has raised up to get the nations lined out and the priorities of the world now. Donald Trump, he's issued a temporary ban on seven Muslim nations that from having anybody coming into our country. Seven Muslim nations now have at least 120 days, 4 months that they've been banned, up to 4 months, from unless they can have completely legal papers completely already, and they can check their background to see if they're completely safe, and then those are the only ones that can possibly come into this country for 120 days. And they said today that timeline can be extended indefinitely. It can be renewed as long as it needs to be. Alright, it says, in that day shall the Yahshua, that's the Son, defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as Yahweh, as the angel of Yahweh before them. Zechariah 12:8. Then clad in the armor of Yahshua's righteousness, declares the spirit of prophecy, the congregation, the purified house of David, that is the new Seventh-day Adventist Church that has embraced all of the sanctuary system completely with all the holy days. This is your new Seventh-day Adventist Church, and it's not it would be more called the eighth movement. This would be the eighth dominion with the purified congregation of Israel that had its origin with the Seventh Day Adventist Church. We are the eighth. Adventist Church is the seventh. They're the seventh. And they're the ones that produced the last feeding pasture, Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, in 1970-2003. The Adventist Church produced the creation calendar through Vernus Johnson to restore the sanctuary system 100% to bring about the purification of the Seventh-day Adventist Church remnant, and that's 144,000, to be the governing body of this here eighth movement, the eighth, and this is the last one. So it says, then clad in the armor of Yahshua's righteousness, declares the spirit of prophecy, the congregation is to enter upon her final conflict, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, terrible as an army of banners. She is to go forth into all the world, conquering and to conquer. Prophecy in Kings 7:25. Those who have been timid and self-distrustful will declare themselves openly for the Yahshua and his truth. The most weak and hesitating in the congregation will be as a David, willing to dare, to do and to dare. Testimony, Volume 5, page 81. Only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to act a part in the proclaiming of the third angel's message. Okay. When it shall have swelled into the loud cry. Review and Herald, November the 19th, 1908. Now, what is this talking about here? Since the loud cry of the third angel is to the Adventist Church once again, because prophecy, according to Ellen G. White, said that in 1844, when they had the first three angels' messages identified and announced, the first angel started in 1833 with William Miller, the First Day Adventist, the sixth church. The second angel was William Miller in 1843, 10 years apart. The third angel was in 1844, 11 years from 1833. And that was for the Adventist Church. The third angel was exclusively for the Adventist Church. She inherited the first and second angel from William Miller because he defaulted and would accept the third angel as belonging to Ellen G. White, because she gave the true interpretation of William Miller's end of the world prophecy. She said it wasn't going to come to the end like he had prophesied, and he was disappointed, and so he wouldn't accept the third angel's message. Helen G. White said the third angel was to be the three angels were to be repeated a second time. Okay, and so we are seeing the repeated three angels' message a second time. And now we're understanding it more clearly for the first time. Only those who have withstood temptation and strength of the Mighty One will be permitted to act a part of in the proclaiming of the third angel's message when it shall have swelled into the loud cry. Okay, so those that have come through the three steps of the genuine movement of Seventh-day Adventists, knowledge-wise, because the three steps of the genuine movement of Seventh-day Adventists covered 120 years. No, it covered 160 years. 440-year periods it covered. 160 years. Well, let's see. Let's back up on that and let's look at that. 1850 to 1890 was the first feeding pastor, Basin. The burst of testimony in 1850 marked the beginning of that first 40-year period. 1890 marked the end of it. And the fulfillment of Ezekiel's full prophecy of the 390 days, a day for a year, that Ezekiel laid on his left side for the iniquity of the house of the Israel. This prophecy began in 1500 with Martin Luther, and it ended in 1890. All right, the second 40 years from 1890 to 1930. Adventist Church received reproof and correction from Ellen G. White for 25 years after 1890 disappointment. And then she died, and the church didn't have any present truth flowing to her for 15 years, from 1915 to 1930. And then in 1930 ended a second 40-year period, that's 80 years. And then from 1930 to 1970 ended the 40-year period for the Shepherd Rod period. So that's 120 years. And then from 1970 to 2010 is another 40-year period for the Gilead Center. So each feeding pasture had a 40-year period, plus a 40-year period of the wilderness wandering from 1890 to 1930. So there is a 40-year period. I finished out the last 40-year period of Gilead Center, finishing out 160 years of prophecy for the Adventist Church. Four feeding pastures. Now we understand more better now when it says there in John 4, 34, 35, and 36. And I'll read it to you. Okay, it says in John 4, 34, it says, Yahshua said unto them, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, to finish his work. Say not ye, they are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. Now what is 4 months? You have 30 days to a month. 4 times 30 is 120. It's 120 years. Okay. Say ye not that they are yet 4 months. So 4 months, 30 days to a month, that's 120 years. And then cometh harvest. Alright, so what was the first, we had the first month started in 1850 to 1890. 30 days to a month? But that's 40 years from 1850 to 1890, so what happened? Well, in each feeding pasture, which is a 40-year period for each one. What happened after 30 years with the first feeding pasture? Yahweh raised up messengers, and he prepared them 10 years ahead of time with a message. And that's what he did to Jones and Wagner. And they preached their message, I know, for at least 10 years before 1890. And they had a message that brought the end of that 40-year period for Basin, first feeding pasture for the Adventist. And what was their message? Righteous by faith. And the people had 2 years to accept it. are rejected. Okay, that's been the case in every situation and every feeding pasture. Then the feeding pasture, there wasn't any feeding pasture for 40 years, from 1890 to 1930. There was a wilderness wandering like Moses did when he left his first 40 years in Pharaoh's palace. He went out at the age of 40. He went to the land of Midian. He escaped into the land of Midian. And he was there 40 years herding sheep. Well, there was no visible leader at that time. Moses was hidden away out in the desert for 40 years. The children of Israel remained under Pharaoh's program for 40 years back in Egypt. And there was no sign of Yahweh's prophet or leader or anybody to deliver the children of Israel. And then one day Yahweh appeared unto Moses at the burning bush in Mount Horeb, and he said, it's time to deliver the children of Israel. So Moses' 40-year period was up. Well, the Adventists in 1930, Yahweh sent a new prophet with the law of Moses, announcing the law of Moses, time for the Israel to come out of Egypt again. So started the second feeding pasture for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and it's called Mount Carmel. It had a 40-year period. But there was a 30-year period there from 1930 to 1960. And what happened in 1960? See, 30 years, a day for a year, represents a month, 30 days to a month. 1960, you had Ben Roden that succeeded V.T. Hollis that died in 1955. V.T. Hollis' wife took over in 55, and she kept the church together for at least 5 years until 1960. Ben Roden took over, and what did he do? He preached the branch message. He said he had a branch message called the branch. And it was to restore the feast days and to keep all the holy days, not just the seventh day Sabbath, but all the holy days. So he preached that for 10 years. Well, when his time was up in 1970, Yahweh called for a harvest. In 1890, he called for a harvest of Jones and Wagner's message. He called for a harvest of Adventists to come and join Jones and Wagner and continue on with a new message, and continue on with it. Well, we know that a lot of people, Adventists, accepted Jones and Wagner, and they continued on with Ellen G. White as the leader. But we know most of them didn't. They continued on with the General Conference and rejected Jones and Wagner, and so therefore they went into a 40-year wilderness wandering. But then, in 1970, Ben Roden brought his message of the branch. Rollo Johnson didn't accept it, but Rollo Johnson was his working partner in 1960. He was his working partner with Ben Roden. But Rollo Johnson drifted away from Ben Roden's teaching. And then Yahweh called Rollo Johnson in 1968, 2 years before that 10-year period was up for Ben Roden. And he gave Rollo Johnson creation calendar and said, teach my people my government. So he called Rollo Johnson in 1968. To come aside and take and develop this creation calendar and put the feast days on true time. Ben Roden set the feast days up, but he put them up he didn't have the creation calendar. He put them up according to the Jewish calendar, which was off. Could be as much as a month off. But at least he introduced the message of the restoration of the sanctuary, and he did that for 10 years. Verla Johnson, what did he do? He took over the helm with a new feeding pasture, Gilead Center. And it had a designated 40-year period. But Verla Johnson didn't know that. So he preached that message for 33 years of the creation calendar. And his prophecies, though, were not right. He wasn't called to fulfill prophecies and to interpret the fulfillment of the prophecies that V.T. Hollis had laid down in the latter rain of truth in the rod message. But he thought he was. But anyway, he did have one thing right, and that he kept the true creation calendar, and he restored the sanctuary and all the feast days. Well, in the year of 2000, Yahweh sent him a message. He said, sanctify the congregation. Knock the doors at 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock at the solemn assembly in 1999, which was the same thing as the year 2000. And so 10 years before the 40-year period of the Gilead Center, Yahweh sent Rollis Johnson a message. Say, thank the Father of the congregation. Well, he failed to obey that message and do it the way the heaven instructed him to do it. And so, therefore, Yahweh cut him off at the atonement of 2002. So, actually, from 1999 to 2002, that was 3.5-year period that he actually had. It was from 1999 at the Solemn Assembly, Brother Johnson had, up until the Passover of 2003, which come to 3.5 years. So Brother Johnson was given 3.5 years of grace period to understand where he was at in the stream of time. But Yahweh gave me that message to get to counsel Brother Johnson for that 3.5 years. Because I started counseling Rollis Johnson at the Solemn Assembly when he didn't obey and lock the doors at 9 and 3 o'clock like Yahweh told him to do, to sanctify the congregation. Consequently, he didn't sanctify the congregation because he didn't obey that order. Yahweh gave me a message and told me to deliver it to him and tell him that because he didn't obey that order to do it the way he was instructed from heaven, that Yahweh had cut off those that didn't make it at that time, at the 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock. Those that didn't make it in on time, they were cut off. And I told him, in essence, you were cut off because you didn't obey it. But Brother Johnson, he insists all the time that I give him message. He says, Yahweh tells you one thing, he tells me another. Well, it depends on what voice you're listening to. So anyway, Rollis Johnson was cut off in 2000, technically at the Passover 2003. Actually, he had his, he was at the atonement of 2002 in the fall. But he had about a 6 month grace period to come into, clear up to the Passover of the second Passover of April of 2003. So he had a 6 month grace period yet to repent and to come on, but he had to come in under us, and he refused to do it. So the 10-year period is from the year of 1999 or 2000 to 2010. So that closed out the full 40-year periods of 160 years for the Adventist Church. But it says here in John 4, it says, verse 35 or 34, it says, Yahshua said that my meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. He said it's to finish his work. But Yahshua came in 2002 at the Passover at the threshold of the house. And he reckoned with Rollis W. Johnson at that Passover. So, what was Yahshua sent to do? He was sent to finish the work that Yahweh has sent to the first time to do. He said, the first time he was sent 2,000 years ago, Yahshua the Son, to set up the work, to set up the kingdom, the everlasting kingdom. He was to set up the first part of it, and that was the kingdom of grace with the apostles. That was the beginning. But at the end of 2,000 years, I am sent to finish his work. Okay? So Yahshua came in 2002 at the Passover to finish the work that the Father had sent him here for. And so he appeared there in 2002 at our congregation invisibly, but we knew he was there because Rollis Johnson prophesied that he would be there in person. Rollis Johnson said that. In 2001, he said, at this Passover of 2002, he says, coming up, he says, Yahshua the Son. He called him Jesus, but he said he will be here at the Passover in person. at our Passover 2002, the upcoming Passover. So, what was he there for? John 4:34. Remember this. Yahshua said unto them, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work. So Yahshua is in charge of what I'm telling you today. He's in charge of my work. And he's going to use my office and in my position and as his underservant, specifically Elijah, David, to finish this work that Yahweh sent him here to do. Okay, so that's an awesome calling, folks. And it says, say not ye, they are yet 4 months and then cometh harvest. In other words, don't say there's 120 years yet, a day for a year, 120 days. Don't say that they're yet 4 months to the harvest. He says, when that time comes, when I come to finish the work, don't say again that there's 4 months to the harvest. In other words, another 120 years that I give the Adventists from 1850 to 1970. Said, so don't say, because Brother Johnson taught in 1970, he said, our work is the harvest work. He said, when you restore the sanctuary completely, that means that's the beginning of that's the foundation for bringing in the harvest. You have to have the sanctuary restored. So he taught that we were in the judgment of the living and that it was time to start the harvest. And he said, 144,000 will be the first ones to come forth, and he said, according to Verlis Johnson's prophecy, as he saw it then, he said it'd be 1974, it's when we see the first fruits harvest. So he taught the harvest of the judgment of the living. Okay, he was, because he was the firstborn, and he had that opportunity. Esau was the firstborn, he was given the first opportunity to be the progenitor of the righteous line in his day. But Jacob ended up inheriting it. Well, the same thing with Verlis Johnson, he was given. He was given the first privilege to fulfill the harvesting of this world, starting with the first fruits of the 144,000 out of the Adventist Church. He was given that privilege. He was given that opportunity. He had 30 years. He had 30 years to preach it and to make good on it, because that's a year. 30 years is when it's time for the firstborn to receive his commission from his father to raise up the righteous line. To inherit the priesthood of the father. So that's 30 years of the age when the inheritor of the birthright starts to be the head now of the kingdom. He's placed at the head of the household, but he's also placed at the kingdom of Israel at the age of 30, when he receives the priesthood commission to now become the head of the kingdom. So here it is, right here, John 4:34-35. Say ye not that there are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. So this is where we're at right now. He's telling me, today is the day. You lift up your eyes, because the fields are now ready to harvest. So, we're going to pray, and we're going to do some fasting, and we're going to do some whatever Yahweh tells us to do to prepare us to deliver these messages that will start bringing these harvests in. But we're going to have to know the time of the antitypical outpouring of the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. We're going to have to know that before we know anything else. And we got to have the outpouring first. We got to have a purification of the Adventist Church. We got to have 144,000 first. And as soon as they come forth, purified section. And you know, I'm seeing this is going to be coordinated with also Donald Trump's purifying and purging this land of all of the uncleanness in this land of the United States of America. I can see it. Yahweh has given him that commission And so Donald Trump is going to have the power of heaven, the Holy Spirit, with him 24/7. And whether he realizes it or not, the Holy Spirit is directing every word and everything, every move that he makes. And it will protect him at all costs. And when it's over with, you're going to have a great warfare, but that's what's going to cleanse this land. We're going to have another civil war. That's what's going to cleanse this, ethnically and physically cleanse this land of all this defilement here in America. And the whole world's going to follow suit. You've got the movement on now, the national populist movement now is on, and it's spreading throughout the whole world. All nations now are waking up, and they're following Donald Trump's lead to revolutionize this whole world, and it's, all nations then are going to be doing the same thing the United States has done. They're going to follow exactly the United States lead. They're saying, if Donald Trump can do it, we can do it too. And so this is what you got going on in the world. Okay, when called themselves, I'm on answer book now, number 4, back to there. I'm on page 7, and actually it says, when called themselves by the name of Yahweh, this question mark. Did not Abel call upon the name of Yahweh when he offered the sacrifice? Genesis 4:4. If so, then why does Genesis 4:26 margin say that after Seth was born, then began men to call themselves by the name of Yahweh? Now this is a good question, folks, and I'm going to show you something here. Because Abel did call upon the name of Yahweh whenever he offered up his sacrifice of blood offering. But Cain, his older brother, that had a dispute with Abel over the true and the false form of worship, because Cain believed that his worship was just as good as Abel's, but Yahweh wouldn't accept it, and Cain got angry. Why? Number one, Cain would not call upon the name of the Yahweh. He called upon the name of Lucifer. Now, I know this is not written. I know, but this is what the Holy Spirit tells me. That Cain was born of the seed of Satan, and so he would never, once he got out from under his father and mother and father's rule at the age of 30 years old, Cain would not. He would not call upon the name of the Father, his true name. He called upon the name of that fallen angel, Lucifer. That's why he was trying to force that down Adam and Eve's throat and his brother Abel. But Cain couldn't do anything until he turned 30 years old and he had the birthright, the firstborn of Adam and Eve, to be the progenitor of the righteous line at 30 years old. That's when they inherit the priesthood of their father's house. And Cain apparently rebelled against the sacrifice. Of course, we know he rebelled against the sacrificial system. We know that. He wouldn't bring a lamb at all. He wasn't about to use that blood. He said, I'm going to use fresh produce grown from my garden. And I'm going to build an altar made out of brick. Cain became the first brick mason. And he built an altar of brick. Abel went and picked up the stones off the ground. And he built him an altar out of just natural stones that Yahweh required. And Yahweh wouldn't accept Cain's form of worship. Number one, because Cain refused to call upon him. I know that. Why would Cain call upon the true name of the Father and offer up a false sacrifice and set up a false form of worship? Why would he do that? And then call upon the correct name of the Father. He wouldn't do it at all. He called upon the God that he was serving, and he was serving Lucifer, and that's who he called on. Now, this is what inspiration tells me. Setting up a false system of worship, just like the Catholic Church did. They counterfeited the true form of worship that the apostles represented, that they had set up with the sanctuary system completely restored with Yahshua as their blood offering and as their high priest at the same time. As the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, the Catholic Church set up a counterfeit system. Cain set up a counterfeit system. Okay, now, that fourth beast that Daniel saw in vision that represented the papal Rome, a pagan Rome at the cross, pagan Rome was born before Yahshua was born 2,000 years ago. Pagan Rome was that fourth beast in Daniel's vision that was born before the cross in the Old Testament time, before Yahshua was born. And so, pagan Rome was ruling Jerusalem at the time Yahshua was born. It was ruling over Jerusalem. Alright, let's go read Genesis chapter 4, verse 1 through 7. And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, I have gotten a man from the Yahweh. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was the keeper of the sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Yahweh. It says here, unto the Lord. Okay. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Yahweh had respect unto Abel and unto his offering. But unto Cain and unto his offering he had not respect, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Yahweh said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted, and if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. Now I know that I said that Cain offered his offering unto Satan. Okay, let's back up a little bit, and let's review that statement. It says here in verse 3 of Genesis 4, And in the process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Yahweh. Okay, so now, he is calling upon the name of Yahweh. And Yahweh, so let's back up a little bit and say Cain was calling on the name of Yahweh, just like Abel was. But Cain brought a false offering and he had set up a false system of worship. In other words, he was telling Yahweh, I'm not going to bring your offering that you have provided and said that I have to bring, a blood offering. I'm not going to do that. He said, I'll worship you. Cain agreed to worship Yahweh if he could set up his own form of worship. And said, if you'll accept my form of worship, I will acknowledge you then, and I'll call upon your name, Yahweh. In other words, he's doing the same thing, Cain is doing the same thing that Satan did to Yahshua when Yahshua came out of 40 years of wilderness wandering. What does Satan say to you? If you'll bow down to me and accept me as being the new ruler of this world, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. So he was asking Yahshua, which Yahshua was here representing the Father. He said, if you'll bow down to me, well, I'll give all these things. You don't have to go through no suffering and no death on the cross. I'll give it all to you because I'm the one that owns this now. I'm the one that overthrew Adam. And the Garden of Eden, that gave me the right to own this world. And now he said, if you'll bow down to me, I'll acknowledge you then as the son of Yahweh. I have never acknowledged you yet, and I won't accept you. I won't accept you now, but if you'll bow down to me, I'll accept you then as being the son of Yahweh. That's no different than Cain telling Yahweh, that I'll worship you and I'll call upon your name only if you'll accept my false sacrifice and let me do it my way. It's the same difference. No difference. So in essence, Cain was telling Yahweh, I'm not here to do to obey your commandments. I'm here to obey Satan's commandments, because I'm going to falsify the plan of salvation. I'm going to falsify it and say, and the number one thing I'm going to say is, you don't have to have a blood offering to serve you. And Yahweh says, ha-ha, oh yes you do. You call upon my name, you're going to have to bring a blood offering or I won't accept it. And he said, and if you do that, he said, and if I don't accept it, he said, then, if, and I'll go ahead and read it now. And Genesis 4:8. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. And Yahweh said unto Cain, where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, what hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And now art thou cursed from the earth. So, whenever Cain became a murderer over this, Yahweh would accept his false worship. Yahweh would accept Cain's condition. When he wouldn't accept his condition, he wouldn't accept his false worship. So what did he do? He went and slew his brother Abel. And now he has Yahweh's curse upon him. And now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. And that's all the Canaanites have ever been since. That's what the Palestinians are today. They're occupying the land of Canaan. Canaan's land, which is the land of Israel. But they're called Canaanites because they're the descendants of Cain. Okay, and they have brought a curse upon the land of Israel because of their presence there. Well, that's what did Yahweh do? He drove Cain out of Adam's household. He drove him out of the land of Eden. He drove him over the mountain into another country. Got him completely out of the borders of what we would call today Israel. The Garden of Eden is the same thing as the borders of Israel back then. So Cain was driven out of the land. Same thing today. All those descendants of Cain is going to be driven out of the land of Israel. Instead of this hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. We'll close the service now with a song entitled Dusty Roads and Sandal Feet, a song that I've written. I have reason to believe in the man of Galilee, for he walked those dusty roads you and me. Often prostrate and prone, carrying burden all alone, as he journeyed along.
Thank you.
The author of the story, Dusty Rose and Sandal.